You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina with your host, S. Evan Townsend.
Hello and welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina. I am S. Evan Townsend. This is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. I am S. Evan Townsend, as I said. I have 5 published science fiction and fantasy novels. If you want to learn more about me, you can go to my website, which is www.sevantownsend.com. That's all one word, sevantownsend.com. Today on the Speculative Fiction Cantina, we have Tony LaRocca. Did I say that right, Tony?
LaRocca. It's good.
LaRocca. Yeah. Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Tony, and what do you write?
I write science fiction. I'm from originally Basking Ridge, New Jersey. At the moment, my day job, I'm an electrician here in New York City. And I like to write science fiction. I've written a collection of short stories, and I'm currently working on a novel.
Cool. That eliminates one of my questions. And also with us today is C. Norman, but he said I could call him Clay, right?
That's right.
Okay,
how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here. Tell us about what you do and what you write and a little bit about yourself.
I live in Texas, and I work in the IT field in a job that's really hard to explain because it all has to do with, like, healthcare rules and regulations, so better left unsaid.
Oh.
When it comes to writing, I write mostly short stories, what I call bite-sized short stories. And when you get into talking about, like, short stories like flash fiction, drabbles, microfiction, I can never really make out what term people want to use for it. So I just say it's bite-sized short stories. They're usually about a page or less than a page long, and it's just whatever idea comes to mind. I touch on a lot of, you know, ideas that are fantasy. I touch on science fiction, some supernatural, just kind of whatever I think of.
Sounds fun. So, Tony, you say you're writing a novel. Why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, geez. Well, it started out as a short story, just kind of grew and grew and grew. And I started saying, well, what is, you know, I would get stuck and I'd say, well, what's my motivation for this character doing this or that character doing that? And I would start writing backstories. And then everything became larger and larger and larger until it just, you know, it became about 400 pages. it's a sort of, I know it sounds cliche, it's a dystopian post-apocalyptic story about it's a future where there have been a disease that wipes out most of humanity, and there's a woman who's an artist, and there's a special kind of paint that it's full of nanomachines, and people use it when their pets die. They use it to paint their pets into a sort of, you know, a painting, kind of, you know, a repose kind of, you know, living painting thing. And her son dies and she winds up painting him, you know, and she paints him into a painting, which is an illegal thing to do for humans. And then there's a church of, there's a whole army of cyborgs who pick up on this and take the painting, and it just goes from there. There's also a large army of cybernetic insects that want to attack, you know, because it just makes it more interesting if you add cybernetic insects into it.
Well, what's their motivation? Yeah. Always got to have conflict. You got to have the cybernetic insects that are attacking. Or
you have to have something waiting in the wings to wipe, you know, and to, you know, take everybody out, you know. And
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, you know, one of the interesting things is that when it started out as a short story, you know, it the main protagonist in my mind, you know, sort of like a lieutenant in this cybernetic army, it was a guy who was almost very reminiscent of, you know, Clive Barker's Pinhead, or, you know, Doug Bradley's portrayal of Pinhead. And then I got kind of in a rut, and I made it a I made the character into a woman instead, and she brought with her a whole different set of motivations, which changed the story entirely. And, you know, it's just amazing how these things just grow and change. You know, from writing how once you start going in a certain direction, then everything changes and takes on a life of its own, and it's become absolutely nothing like the story I originally started with, but it's hopefully entertaining enough that people want to read the whole thing.
Great. Well, good luck with that. Do you have a title for it yet?
Thank you. It's the title that's been a sort of a contention with me. I was going to call it originally Nanopaint, but then I turned out, you know, because the nanomachines are in the paint, and then it turned out that there actually is something called Nanopaint with carbon tubes in it. So it's tentatively called Zhivoy Paint, which is the Russian word for life. So, you know, living paint, you know, kind of thing. So it's that's the tentative title. Whether it's interesting enough, you know, I have to decide if that's interesting enough for people. Wow, I want to see this. Or if people just be like, Zhivoy Paint, what the hell is that? I don't care. All right, move on to the next thing, you know. So it's, at the moment, that's tentatively what I'm going to call it.
The titles are always a challenge for me. I have never know what to title my novels. It's just drives me crazy. So I feel for you in trying to pick a title for your novel. Clay, you say you write flash fiction, so you have to come up with titles all the time.
That's definitely a challenge.
Why do you enjoy writing flash fiction versus something longer like a short story or a novel?
I think it really started with me having a short attention span for writing a full story. I would sit down to try to write, and I would get an idea, and I would, you know, write a page or two, and then I would come up with a new idea, and I would put the first one aside, and soon I just had a bunch of half thought out ideas, and I didn't really think I could, you know, I couldn't seem to finish anything, and then I didn't really know about, you know, flash fiction and short fiction and vignette writing and that kind of thing. So when I ran across some sites that had, you know, short fiction like that, I was like, well, hey, I can just do this. When I get an idea, I can just, you know, sketch out a scene or a concept, and then, you know, it, maybe at some point I will flesh it out, but if not, I've got at least, you know, that, you know, little story worked out, and I can move on to the next idea and not feel guilty about it.
Oh, that sounds great.
I was going to say, Clay, your stories almost read like Zen koans. I read, it's like I feel like there's some hidden meaning in there, you know, if I just concentrate on them for a long time, you know.
There are times when I feel like that too after I've written it. Sometimes I'm not even sure. I'm like, this seems like there's some deep meaning that I'm trying to tell myself.
I would say the Corbamite remover was my favorite one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that one is, and that's an example of something where I was inspired by a podcast that I was listening to where they have a section where they do trivia and quizzes about Star Trek, and they kept mispronouncing the name of that episode. And so I just was like, I could write a story all around that.
About the mispronunciation of the Corbin, no, I can't pronounce it, the Corbomite
maneuver? Yeah, the Corbomite maneuver. And you know, just fixating on them not being able to pronounce it, and also just the fact that no one really knows what it is, you know.
That's sort of like an
opinion. But that was just, But that's usually what happens is I will get just some idea, like, you know, what if, you know, the zombie apocalypse happens, but the zombies aren't really that threatening. They're just kind of annoying and they get in your way, but they're not actually, you know, and it, you know, the worst thing that happens is you might run over one and then have to get your car washed.
And all your stories are on your website, herebewonder.com?
Yep.
Have you put them on Wattpad or anything like that?
I haven't put them there. I've had some of them are on ReadWave, and I haven't looked at any other places recently to put them. I always think that I should probably do that, but you know, I'm not really sure where is the best place to put short fiction like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw an article, about Wattpad that a movie studio just bought a story that or a novel that was published on Wattpad.
Nice.
So,
Yeah.
So, Clay, I want to ask you a very serious question now. Why have you never ridden a horse?
Oh, why have I never ridden a horse? I, for some reason, even though, you know, I've been in Texas, you know, pretty much my whole life, I just have never really been around horses much. It just seems like, you know, I never knew anybody that had horses or rode horses. I had a friend, you know, just a few years back that rode a horse, but, you know, it's not like he had it at his house or anything. So, you know,
well, you know,
just for some reason that was never.
Yeah. They're not indoor pets. Yeah. Tony, have you ever ridden a horse?
I think I probably rode a pony at a street fair in Brooklyn. I have a vague recollection. If I flog my memory, that's about as much as I think I've gotten it.
Yeah, riding horses is interesting. I did some when I was a kid because my grandparents had a farm and I rode some horses. And the problem I found with horses is they have minds of their own, unlike a car, which does what you want it to do normally. You know, horses, they're like, I want to go back to the barn. So tell me, what inspired your novel, or not your novel, your novel that you're working on? What inspired that? I mean, we talked about sort of the genesis of it, but
sure.
Why did you come up with this idea of the nano paint that brings things sort of back to life?
It started with when I was in high school. We had a teacher who I was friends with, who sadly lost her child at an early age. So that sort of always stuck in my mind. And then the mother in the story is not really based on her, but that event, you know, always kind of stuck with it. And then I've always been fascinated by, you know, because a lot of virtual reality comes into play within the story. You know, it's funny because originally the virtual reality wasn't there. It was just a story of, you know, the woman had painted this child, and then into the painting, and then, you know, the mysterious cyborgs come to take it away, and, you know, it was her fleeing from them, and then it became more and more, well, why do they want this painting? Why do they care? You know, why? And it just took from there. But I guess that event has to be, you know, what started it all. The whole thing in my mind is, you know, well, what would you do? You know, and then eventually, you know, at the time I had a son and a daughter of my own. So you think, well, what would you do, you know, to preserve them? You know, what would you do to hold on to them? And it just grew from there.
Interesting. Clay, I'm trying to think how to word this question for you. Just take your last story that you wrote. What inspired it?
I think what inspired, I'm trying to think what the last one I wrote was, but I think what inspires most of my stories is growing up, I was always really interested in the Twilight Zone because the Twilight Zone to me was always, you know, it was the what if question. You know, what if someone is put in this situation where, you know, there's something strange that's happening to them and how they deal with it. And, or, you know, what if the you know, something that is unthinkable happens and now we get to see how people deal with the, with that. And I think that's what, where I get a lot of my ideas is I will just, you know, think, okay, what if there is, you know, a, what if, from one of my stories, the basically at the, you know, presents the idea that what if the devil decided to take over the food channel and slowly try to corrupt mankind by just, you know, inducing, you know, gluttony into them by way of the TV. You know, what if that happens, you know? And just, I just get these ideas for, like, how can I, you know, how can I play with a common thing and see it from a different angle?
That's very interesting. You know, this is the Speculative Fiction Canteen, and speculative fiction is pretty much what if.
Right.
You know, you're thinking about what if there was paint to bring people back alive, or what if the devil took over the food channel and corrupted us all with gluttony. Maybe that's what's going on in this country. I don't know. So, Claire, why did you start writing?
Was that to me?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, Clay.
Yeah, I think ever since I was, you know, pretty much young, I've been trying to figure out some creative outlet. And when I was in like middle school, I used to write fairy tales, and you know, I didn't write a whole lot of them, but I started writing fairy tales. I would read fairy tale books, and I would kind of write my own versions of them, and that, you know, I kind of liked that, playing with those kind of themes. But I do remember someone telling me one time that, you know, you can't just do that. You can't just write a fairy tale. You know, those fairy tales, they've been around for a long time. You're not supposed to do that. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'm not supposed to do that. And I think for a long time, I didn't really know how to get my creative, you know, energy out. I tried being a musician for a long time, but the less said about that, the better, I think. But it's just in recent years, I think the internet kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, I was thinking the way to write was you had to sit down and write a novel, and that was the only way to be a writer was to, you know, have a book. And when the internet came along and I saw websites where people were posting short stories, you know, that they didn't have to have a book, I was like, hey, that's another way to do it.
Very cool. Tony, why did you start writing?
It goes back to when I was young, I would say around 11 or 12, and got a giant Ray Bradbury book out of the library. And I would hide at night under the covers with a flashlight. And that's why I'm so wonderfully nearsighted as I am today. And I would just absorb them and suck them all up, and it just completely opened a world of wonder for me. And so then I kind of moved on. You know, you get a little older, and, you know, all your friends are into Stephen King. And you start, you know, expanding and reading more and more, and I just decided to start trying it myself, you know. And I found that once, you know, you'd have an idea, you'd start writing a story or like fan fiction, you know, I think a lot of, you know, there was back then, you know, nobody, the term fan fiction hadn't really been coined, but I think that's how a lot of people started writing my own little Star Trek stories or, you know, my own Doctor Who stories back, you know. And then I realized how much things take off on their own. You know what I mean? Like when you start writing and ideas or characters start doing things on their own and all, like, oh, wow, you know, like, where did this come from? You know, and the characters start saying their own things and doing their own things and just that whole, you know, to be corny, magic, you know, happens. And that's what I guess became addicted to.
Oh, okay, great. By the way, I forgot to mention at the beginning of this program that if you're listening and you want to call in and ask either one of these gentlemen a question, dial 347-945-7246 and press 1, and that will let me know that you want to be on the air and ask a question. So, sorry I didn't say that at the beginning, and now I have said it, so we're okay. Tony, what do you love about writing?
Well, I guess I preempted that. Just that magic feeling of when things take on a life of their own. You know, when you know, like for example, you know, I come up with an idea, you know, or like for my short stories, for example, you know, I come up with an idea or a character, and then I play around with it and write a little scene, and all of a sudden, some ideas start happening. And then they just grow on, you know, and characters start saying and doing things on their own. And at some point I have to stop and say, okay, now I have to make some sort of coherent, logical plot. And that's fun, too, is making almost like solving a riddle, you know, or a puzzle, like, okay, how can I make some sort of logical story with some hopefully satisfying ending out of this? And then I go back and I fill in those blanks. And again, things either take, you know, and if things start flowing within that pattern, it works well. Sometimes they take a life on their own and go in a different direction. And, but that's what I love more than, that's what I love the most about it, is when things just start coming to life on their own and, you know, just kind of, I don't know if it's dulging my own subconscious, you know, or, you know, finding whatever I find, but that when that happens, that's my favorite thing.
Great. That's one of the things I love about writing. Clay, what do you love about writing?
I think what I really enjoy is something that I also know that it's very hard for me to do sometimes, is when you are reading something or when you have written something that you wrote and you can, when you, the rhythm is just right and the words are just right and you can feel like that, those are the only words that you could have used, that those sentences and those paragraphs are all put in just the right way so that you couldn't change that now. You know that that's the right way that things are supposed to go. They just feel right. And I love when that comes together that way. It doesn't come together as often as I really would like. There's a lot of times where I feel like I've got a good beginning sentence, I've got a good ending sentence, and the stuff in the middle I'm not so sure about. But when it all comes together, when the rhythm works just right, then I feel like, okay, you know, now I've got it going on.
Very good. Yeah, that's... I agree with both of you gentlemen about those great things about writing. Now, Clay, what do you hate about writing?
I think the biggest, I don't know if I'd say I'd hate it, but the biggest challenges that I feel like are, well, one of them we touched on earlier, which is coming up with a title for a story that... The thing that I really struggle with sometimes is I want a title that makes sense, that doesn't give anything away, but that also isn't just too obvious or too dry a title. Like, you know, if it's too ordinary sounding, then I feel like it can easily get lost. But if it's too specific, then, like, I know with flash fiction, there have been times when I have read other stories and I read the title and I'm like, well, just from the title, I already know how the story's going to end. They gave too much away in the title, and that's so hard. And then the other thing that I struggle with is because I don't use the same characters in my stories. You know, it's almost always a different character. There have only been a couple of times where I've reused a character. So I'm always struggling to come up with a name for a character where I don't want to use the same names over and over again. But after a while, it's like, man, I'm getting tired of trying to come up with a name for these guys without getting too strange.
Yeah, Google random name generator. It's very useful.
I've used the name generators. I've used like population consensus reports. You know, sometimes I'll just look at Twitter and just like pick a name of someone off of there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I hate
baby naming books help.
Baby naming books help.
Yeah, that's good too.
Coming up with, and there's lots of baby naming websites on the internet. They'll tell you what the name means if you want that to mean something. Coming up with names of characters, I just love that with a passion. Tony, what do you hate about writing?
I hate to see what Clay had said about getting the perfect rhythm and the perfect words. For me, see, the after everything flows out in the first draft and it's wonderful, then I have to go back and I scour either the short story or the chapter, like, over and over and over again, reading it out loud to myself to get that perfect rhythm and to get that, certainly the grammar, the punctuation, you know, and all that perfect, but also the rhythm, finding the perfect words, looking back and realizing that, you know, I have somebody, sighing, too many sighs, too many phrases, you know what I'm saying, too many, like, phrases or... emotion tags that I use, tell people rubbing their face, everybody's rubbing their faces 100 times, or sighing or doing something that, or getting butterflies in their stomach or, trying to mix it up enough, trying to keep everything, non-repetitious and trying to have, a good flow and, okay, am I going too fast? Am I going too slow? Am I, that's when all the perfectionism settles in, So I guess getting it up to, some sort of anal retentive par of mine, that's the hardest part for me.
That's the worst thing about, one of the things about being a writer for me is, like, if I read something that's been published of mine and I find a sentence that I go, oh, I could have written that better. And somehow it slipped through my 13 different edits. And I actually, and I recommend this if you have someone who can do this, I have my wife read my stories to me. I hear things when she's doing that I don't pick up when I'm reading. And other people say, have your Kindle read it to you. And I don't know how to, you have to upload it to your Kindle somehow and put the Kindle on speech mode.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to do that. So I have a wife and I say, here, read this to me. And she's like, it's 3,000 pages long. I'm like, yeah, we're going to be here a while. But I felt good because my last novel, Gods of Strife, made her cry twice.
I'm sorry,
my last novel, The Gods of Strife, made her cry twice.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I felt really good about that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Tony, do you have a special place to write? Do you have a special... reading ritual, you have to have the right shirt on and the right hat, or tell us how you're writing.
Where I would write lots of times was either, used to be with a pocket PC, now with my Android, writing either on the subway or on the bus. Now I'm, my routine is I get up, because I'm like in the scouring phase of my novel here. So it's a matter of I get up an hour earlier. I get up about 4 in the morning and I do, I get ready and then I spend about, an hour, which really isn't as much time as I'd like, but, doing my editing and scouring over and stuff. Or, while I'm at work, I can also, either during lunch or coffee or something, I can do it. Google Docs is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
Because of, being able to, okay, I saved it at home. Now I can go and, look at it on, and check it over there on my phone. you know, and out there. So with that, you know, much of my writing was done on the subway, you know, being, which made the time fly by, you know, more than any, to me, that makes the time fly by more than anything writing. So I guess that's, that was, I don't have a special, you know, I know some people have their special routines. I don't have anything like that, but I, just a lot of time, you know, when the subway got stuck in a tunnel or something, which, you know, carried over into some of my stories, my irritation at that, is where a lot of it was done.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for example, I have a friend, she has to listen to music at full volume before she can write. You know, and I listen to the fan on my computer. Clay, do you have any special writing ritual, place you write?
Yeah, sort of in a way, I would say probably 90% of my stories I write while I'm doing the dishes. And I will get an idea and I'll be doing the dishes and I will start to pretty much I will outline it in my head, and I will sometimes, you know, either after doing the dishes or even I'll stop in the middle and I will just go, I'll go jot that idea down and just kind of write as much of it out as I can and, you know, as quickly as I can, not worrying about, you know, the spelling too much or anything, just get that outline down. And then I will usually set it aside and come back a little bit later and, you know, open up that, you know, the document and just kind of like look over it again. And am I still excited about this idea? Does it still sound fun? Then I'll start, you know, kind of tweaking it and getting it into shape. But yeah, that's probably what I would call my writing time is doing the dishes.
That's very interesting. I'm amazed how much writing I do in the shower. Tony, you won't understand this because you live. While you've been out west, you know, you're driving down the interstate. You have the cruise control set. You can't see another car in your rearview mirror in front of you. There's nothing to do, so I just start writing. You know, I'm just driving on autopilot and writing. Yeah, because there's nothing else to do. There's not a lot of traffic density out here in parts of the west. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I want to hear you guys read from some of your works. So
wonderful.
We'll be right back.
This is the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Right Stream Radio.
Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, tune in to Right Stream Radio Network for Just Believe with author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis. Lisa interviews experts in the areas of health and wellness, alternative healing, paranormal phenomena, intuitive guidance, and positive living. With her own inimitable down-to-earth style, Lisa makes both guests and callers welcome and appreciated. Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis, Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, here on the Right Stream Radio Network.
And we're back. And Tony has disappeared on us. Hopefully he'll call back in right away. So if not, I guess it'll just be you and me for the rest of the show. The joys of technology. So, Clay, you said you have some short stories, since your stories are pretty short, that you want to read. Just go ahead, introduce them, and let's hear them.
All right. I had three that I was going to try today, and just kind of a variety here. So I don't know how to really introduce any of these ideas because they're pretty short, so I'll just start into one of them. So that's fine. So this one is called One of Many Things. I am one of many things. No one named me, so I named myself. The master created me and those like me to guard his trinkets. We are mindless slaves. We exist only to serve, to wait for some unfortunate fool who tries to steal what we protect. My brothers, I believe, are not aware. There is no glimmer in their dark eyes. I alone seem to be aware, aware but trapped. I cannot move unless the spell allows. I long for release. When the master comes to check his fortune, I am aware. I dream of grabbing his throat and ending this. I see the way he looks at me. I see the smirk. He too is aware. So that was the first one. So I'll move on to the second one. This one is called Herkimer 7. Herc doesn't remember his birth. He's not sure when he came to be aware. His memory is fragmented, but he knows his destination, the blue-green planet that feels like home. His mission was to seek out evidence of life in the vast reaches of space, and now he is returning home, successful. How happy my family will be, he thinks, to meet my new friends. His sensors glance back at the mass of ships trailing him, wave after wave of sleek, shiny disks.
Very good.
All right, and one last one, and this one's actually a little shorter than the other ones. This one is just called Typing. He types on good, strong paper. As he finishes, he holds the page up to the light, drinking in the details. It's kind of a fetish. It's not really necessary, but he loves the feel of the heavier paper. It's worth the extra cost. Most kidnappers wouldn't be so particular with their ransom notes, but he figures if you're going to do it with style.
That's it? That's cool.
That's it.
Because at the beginning you think he's router, and then, oh, he's writing ransom notes. Tony has come back.
Yes, sorry
about
that. I got disconnected.
No problem. Yeah, well, that's like that we said while you were gone, technology is wonderful when it works.
Yes.
So, Tony, you have something for us to that you're going to read.
Sure. Okay.
Can you give us a little background on it, or at least the title?
Yes. It's a short story of mine, Attaware, which is in my collection. And it's funny because I was thinking about this when you said about the title, Clay, about titles giving away things, because I don't want to give anything away, but a friend of mine helped me, you know, I guess he worked more with software, and he was like, no, you need to change your title to something else. So that helped. But I did a little questionnaire on my blog and Facebook, you know, what story did people want to hear? And this was the one they chose the most. So if you're ready, I guess I'll go. Okay, Attaware. Death by midlife crisis, Richard Brigham thought as he tumbled through the void. Please don't let them put that on my tombstone. He had never expected death to be so annoying. If only he had lived, he could have sued Fun Sport Jetpacks for incorrectly labeling their product. It should have read, not to be purchased by men in their 40s, hell-bent on proving. Mr. Brigham, someone said in the darkness, please open your eyes. Richard jerked as the voice sluiced away the bliss of oblivion. He heard the whine of machinery and felt his limbs sting with pings and needles. He was corporeal again, and his burning lungs demanded that he breathe. He gasped, opening his eyes. The reek of ammonia flooded his sinuses. He lay on his back, suspended by an anti-gravity harness within a vast mint-green chamber. An array of nightingales hovered above, scanning him with flickering rays of blue light. He raised his head an inch and was rewarded with a stomach-churning vertigo. A man with a smooth face and glistening spectacles loomed into Richard's view. Welcome back from the abyss, he said, arching his eyebrows on the last word. There was a W.E. embroidered on his white coat, the insignia of a wellness extra specialist. Richard's mind spun. There were life lessons here, he realized. Do not jetpack through Times Square, even if some schmuck from marketing dares you. Remember that skyscraper canyons create wind tunnels. When you lose control and find yourself tossed around like God's beanbag, please feel free to wet yourself. But most important of all, stay away from Port Mort Cola billboards, especially if they are giant LCD displays designed to be seen from space, because it will hurt and hurt bad when you smash into one. He tried to speak with the numb piece of meat that was his tongue. How? He mumbled. Crash! Yes, the W.E. said. You were electrocuted, I'm afraid. It cooked your heart beyond repair. He grinned. But you'll be happy to know we've replaced it with a fully functional biomechanical one that's top of the line. It took a moment for the words to sink into Richard's addled brain. His eyes widened as understanding brought with it a pang of anxiety. Money, he said. Can't afford. Don't worry about that, the W.E. said. Americana coverage. Free health care for all, no matter the need, no matter the cost. We cover everyone. The fear in Richard's mind waned. Free, he said. Just about, said the doctor. He bowed from the waist. Call me Dr. Hank. Perhaps you've seen my face on the Americana posters, conveniently located. Richard smiled as he sank back onto his pillow, ignoring the idiot's prattle. He was alive and he was covered. What else mattered? Free, he whispered. Portmore Cola! Portmore Cola! Portmore Cola! Richard woke to the sound of his own screams. He slumped back onto sweat-damp sheets. 2 weeks had passed since the accident. 2 weeks and the nightmares would not stop, but all Dr. Hank offered in the way of help was psychobabble. The billboard was the last thing you saw before death, the quack insisted. It's only natural for the subconscious to replay its tragedy. Richard had no stomach for that kind of crap. In fact, he wanted to wring the W.E. by his patronizing neck. He blinked. His thoughts had taken him out of his bedroom, down the hall, and into the kitchen. He sank to his knees on the cold, tiled floor, trembling. He was going insane. He was losing his mind. He was thirsty. Christ, he was thirsty. He opened the Sakatumi. They were still in there, of course, 12 of them. They sat innocently on the shelf. Richard caressed one, feeling the cool, sleek glass in his hand. He read the label, Portmore Cola. He yanked it out of the refrigerator, tore off the cap, and chugged it down. The empty bottle fell from his fingers and shattered on the floor as he grabbed another, then another, and then another. He let out a long, triumphant belch, the sticky cola dribbling down his chin. After a few minutes, the refrigerator spoke up. "Excuse me, sir," it said, "but you're letting all the cold air out." Richard ignored it as a chill settled over him. He could not see any more bottles. He tore the shelves out, throwing moldy leftovers and condiments to the floor. "More port, more," he said. His throat burned. "May I suggest some fruity fun punch?" the Sakatubi asked. "It's nutritious, tastes great, and keeps you regular, all for one credit." "More port, more." "I'm sorry, sir, but I'm all out," said the refrigerator. "If you'd insert only 4 credits, I'll have another 12-pack sucked to me in a jiffy." Richard slammed the door. He sniffed. There was some sweet, sweet cola somewhere close. He fell to the floor amongst the shards of broken bottles. A drop here, a drop there. He could sense them. He stuck out his tongue and lapped up the delicious Portmore Cola, garnished with just a touch of glass. A month later, Richard waddled into the wellness clinic. His bloodshot eyes were downcast, staring with guilt at his tremendous gut. He leaned against the wall and waited for his wellness extra specialist's tirade. "Richard," said Dr. Hank as he strolled into the room, "it seems that you've put on weight." He stumbled backwards as Richard leapt at him, grabbing the W.E. by his collar. "You gotta help me, Doc," he said. "I'm going insane." A benign, pitying smile came to Dr. Hank's face. He clapped his hands and the lights dimmed. The examination table inflated and molded itself into a couch. "Fortunately for you, your Americana wellness extra specialist is trained for everything," he said, pulling a small pad out of his coat. "Please, tell me what the problem is." Richard sank onto the couch. He closed his eyes and recounted his recurring nightmare. "I crawl through the desert," he said. "The sand burns my skin. I'm dying of thirst. On the horizon, I see an oasis. I run to it and drink, but the water is bitter and stings my throat like rotten grapefruit juice. I look up, and a camel is doing its business in it. Nauseous, I crawl to the next oasis. It's full of milk, sweet, cool milk. But by the time I get there, it's moldy and reeks of decrepit cheese. Green blobs float in it. I sally forth, and finally I reach another oasis. And this time, it's Portmore Cola. I really don't like Portmore, but of course I drink it, and it's the most refreshing thing I've ever had. Suddenly, I'm not in the desert anymore. I'm at a beach party, and there are half-naked women jiggling around me, cheering my name. Then I wake up." "Hmm," said Dr. Hank as he scribbled. "And I assume..." "Yeah," Richard said, nodding his double chins. "When I wake up, all I want is Portmore Cola. I got kegs of it vacuumed to my house now. I had to get a bigger fridge." Dr. Hank munched on the end of his pen for a few seconds. "This is very serious," he said, clapping his pad shut. "You clearly have a problem with taking responsibility for your actions. You have gained 30 pounds in the past month. You sit around the house swilling soft drinks, but instead of blaming yourself, you blame your dreams. Very serious. He leapt to his feet and clapped his hands again. Fluorescent lights flooded the room once more. The couch tossed Richard to the floor and deflated. The W.E. walked to a wall console, checked a display screen, and made a few adjustments. Richard jerked, feeling a stinging in his chest. "What are you doing?" he asked, clutching his chunky breasts. "I'm reprogramming the heart to compensate for your extra weight and to keep up with the aerobic regimen I'm going to prescribe." "What about my nightmares?" Richard asked. He grimaced as his heart surged against his ribs. Dr. Hanks sighed. "I've told you," he said, "the subconscious is a fickle mistress. You have to listen to her. Like it or not, she's the boss." He tapped another section of the display, causing Richard to twitch and sink. "My advice to you is to listen to your dreams. They know what you need to be happy." He gave Richard a few more spasms by remote. "See you next month." Richard had read once that everyone dreamt three times a night. They just usually did not remember them. Before the accident, he had rarely recalled his dreams. Now, he remembered them all in vivid details. In his nightmares, an army of reeking sows chased him in the rain, all wanting to have their way with him. He tried to run, but he was too obese, and his shoes just slid in the mud. After a few nights of being amorously pursued by livestock, he bought himself a tummy trainer treadmill, a short stepper, and a decade supply of Proteum vitamins. As Richard's physique improved, his nightly horror show worsened. In them, he walked down streets of shining gold, packed with beautiful pedestrians. He, however, was dressed like a derelict. Urine-soaked rags clung to his body. Some nights he was a clown. On the most embarrassing nights, he wore nothing at all. The passerbys kicked and beat him to the gutter. They all wore bum-squeezed jeans and crew shirts with little goldfish embroidered on them. Somehow he knew that they would accept him, would care for him, would make passionate love to him, if only he fit in. After two nights, Richard took the hint and bought himself a designer wardrobe. Every few weeks, he returned to the wellness clinic, every time Dr. Hank readjusted his ticker. But no matter what the good W.E. prescribed, his nightmares kept getting worse. 6 months to the day of his resurrection, a haggard, trembling Richard Brigham stumbled into the clinic. Dr. Hank pursed his lips as he examined his favorite patient. "What's wrong with you?" he asked. "The last time you were here, we discussed your dreams of a 96-inch virtue viewer. Didn't you buy it? Isn't it keeping you happy?" "No," Richard said. "No, it isn't." He glared at his wellness extra specialist. "You said to listen to my dreams. The dreams said I needed the virtue viewer to escape." Dr. Hank frowned, scratching his chin. "And it's not working?" "It is. That's the problem," Richard said. "I never wanted to escape before. I never spent my free time watching verts. Now that's all I want to do. What's the point of living if all I want to do is escape?"
Now, said Dr. Hank. He gave Richard a fatherly pat on his shoulder. "You have been through a very traumatic experience. It's only natural that your inner voices conflict with each other. Listen to your dreams, for they are the music of your soul."
Richard looked at him with pleading, bloodshot eyes. "Can't you give something to stop the dreams?" he asked.
"Stop the dreams?" Dr. Hank whispered, his eyes wide. "What are you, insane?"
He spun to the wall console and stabbed at it.
"You need the dreams. They are your salvation."
A lightning storm erupted inside of Richard's chest.
"Please," he gasped. "Can't you just prescribe some sort of sedative?" "I am prescribing," said Dr. Hank, his face puffy and red. "I am prescribing that you listen to you."
He punctuated every syllable with a jab at the touchpad.
"You just get a good night's rest and remember to listen."
The nightly insanity rose to a crescendo. Richard dreamt of Portmort colas, follicle friends, bum squeezes, and virtue viewers. An army of brand-name logos chased him through a maze of streets. When they caught him, they tore off his no-frills cotton T-shirt and branded his flesh with a red-hot iron that spelled traitor.
"Listen,"
the logos commanded, drowning out his screams.
"Listen."
He consulted 9 different wellness extra specialists. After checking his history, all of them told him to stop whining and just follow his dreams. None would prescribe anything to stop them. After a month of condescension from reputable W.E.s, Richard decided to seek out a disreputable one. Of course, taking prescriptions from such a person was illegal. Suffering nightmares alone in his bedroom was one thing, suffering them alongside a cellmate was another. But in the end, it only took a few phone calls and a painful amount of money.
The trail of shady contacts led Richard to an alley that stank of human refuse. He staggered down it, occasionally avoiding bundles of soiled blankets that moved. He shook, certain that she would not show, that she had been set up, that it was all a joke. Just as he was ready to turn and run, a rusty steel door screeched open, and his promised savior lurched forth. She was 60-ish. Ticks randomly cracked her leathery face. She held out a nicotine-stained claw as Richard approached. He hesitated, then dropped a cashier's chit into it. She examined the chit in the amber glow of the streetlights and shrugged. She reached into her tattered white coat, pulled out a small plastic bottle, and smacked it into Richard's hand. He stared at it, praying he had not just paid 1,000 credits for sugar pills or worse. "Are you sure this is right?" he asked. I need to get some rest. But when he looked up, she was gone. Richard clutched the bottle to his chest, not daring to release it until he was home. He gulped 2 of the tranquilizers down dry and curled up on his bed, not bothering to take off his clothes. The pills were not bitter, nor were they sweet. He did not feel dizzy or nauseous. "My God," he thought, "they're the real deal." Tears of relief ran down his cheeks as he sank into darkness, a darkness that was a dreamless bliss. The funeral, paid for by Americana, was held at an eternal rest crematorium. Dr. Hank stood in the back of the tiny congregation, swaying back and forth to the organ's dirge. He felt obligated to be present. His prized patient had suffered total heart failure. Obviously, there were some problems with the Beta 3 model. Perhaps they would have better luck with the Beta 4. A tear ran down the wellness extra specialist's cheek as the pearl-encrusted gates of the furnace parted and Richard's coffin slid inside. He consoled himself that it was not his fault, that his patient should have known better. After all, what kind of fool expected AdWare to work if he blocked the advertisements? The end.
Yeah, you get a free heart. Yeah. You guys are making me feel inadequate. You're such good writers. I'm very impressed by both your skills at putting words together. So. Oh, I don't know what to say after that.
Yeah, it was great.
It was wonderful.
And so was
Clay's stories.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Thank you.
Clay, do you have the problem of writer's block, and if you do, how do you overcome it?
I think, you know, every now and then it's because of the way that I write and writing short stories that, you know, I'm usually not having to continue a story the way that, you know, a novelist would. So for me, writer's block comes more from just not having an idea. Sometimes I can't come up with an idea. And my trick that I use to sometimes get myself out of it is I actually use the jumble from like a newspaper or from online. I will look at the jumble and I will look at the words that are the solution for the puzzle, because they always have like 4 words and they're always like kind of random words. And for some reason, like, I've tried random word generators and I always seem like with random word generator websites, I just get the same stuff over and over again. It seems like it's always like, you know, red tractor or something. And I'm like, I can't do much with that. But I look at the jumble and it's like, here's some words that, you know, they don't seem to have anything to do with each other. So what can I do with that? Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
That is a very interesting technique. Tony, how do you overcome writer's block?
I walk away from it for a few days. Something just doesn't work. I just find my, and it's interesting, you know, and sometimes it solutions come within a week or sometimes a month. And then I sit there and you want it to come as quickly as possible. But sometimes it takes a while, but then you realize, okay, this is the perfect solution. This is the, you know, this is what I've been looking for. This is the right, you know, thing. So I just have to walk away and come back.
Yeah, that's one method a lot of people use. Me, I just keep writing and figure if I write bad stuff, I can throw it out. So outside of writing, Tony, what inspires you?
Outside of writing?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess every day You know, well, I have my, I guess just people I meet, people in my life, you know, my family, just the world, you know, you sometimes, you know, just, you know, the world events take a hold of you. Or sometimes I like to walk. I find if I, you know, walk in a crowd, especially, you know, here in New York, it's, you know, you have so many crowded people. And if just sometimes I like to just watch and look at people and, you know, not to the point where they want to stab me or not to, you know, overtly. But, you know, if you just look at someone for a bit, you can get a feel of them. If you really, really look, you know, and you can almost get a sense of where they've been and where they're going, you know, and what's going through their mind, you know, and their hold, their clothes, the way they carry themselves and stuff, and or just current events, what's going on in the world. You know, sometimes things get you in a certain way or, you know, affect you or, you know, it doesn't have to be a major event, can be a small event in your life. So I guess just life and all of its wonder.
All right. Clay, what outside of writing inspires you?
I liked his answer. I think I think one of the ways that I can get inspired is I grew up in the 80s and you know there's a lot of the pop culture stuff from the 80s like that I grew up with, you know like Transformers and G.I. Joe and that kind of stuff that I have a real, you know, I grew up with that stuff and I have a real connection to it. And I kind of get like, I look at that kind of stuff and I get kind of inspired by like, and this also kind of extends to like comic books and stuff is like somebody's job, you know, some toy company says, okay, here is a, you know, a toy that, you know, we're working on and your job is to, you know, to come up with a name for this character and describe this character and put, you know, to put on the package, you know, to describe what kind of the person this character is or what kind of robot, you know, this personality this robot has, or, you know, like in card, you know, like card games, like the Magic the Gathering kind of card games, you know, okay, this card has this function, but we need some little thing description at the bottom to give it some flavor. And I'm like, I get inspired by that kind of, you know, someone's job is to do that. You know, to just look at, you know, here, just play, you know, basically here is some vague notion of a toy or a robot that turns into a, you know, a truck or, you know, a cassette player. Now explain why.
And explain how the little cassettes become giant birds and giant, you know, lions.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. I always like. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I look at things like that, like toys and my computer or, you know, whatever, just sitting around, and I go, who designed that? Why did they make that choice? And why is it this way and not this way? And, you know, yeah, I find that very interesting. Of course, I have a engineering background, so that's part of the problem. So we are pretty much out of time, pretty close to out of time. I'd like to ask either of you guys if anything you want to add. Clay?
I can't think of anything.
All right.
Yeah, I can't either, Colin? But it's been wonderful, a lot of fun.
Great. Yeah, it was great having both of you gentlemen. Listeners, if you want to learn more about either of these gentlemen, you can go to my blog where there are links to their website, links to Tony's book where you can buy it. And that is blog.sevantownsend.com, or just go to sevantownsend.com and click on blog, or Google sevantownsend.com, and you can probably find me that way. There's all sorts of ways to get things on the internet. Tony and Clay, it's been great to have you on. It's been great to have hear your writing. Like I said, you intimidated me. I'm like, oh, I got to up my game. You guys are. You're such good writers, and yeah, I've got to up my game with you guys in the house. This is what my competition is. I'd like to remind everybody that next Tuesday on the 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time or 10 a.m. Pacific, I will be on Right Stream Tuesday. I'll be on the other side of this thing. I'll be the guy they're interviewing. So if you want to learn more about me, tune in then. Tony and Clay, thank you very much. And
thank you.
Again.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more,
great.
You're welcome, man. You're welcome. If you want to learn more, go to my website, s7townsend.com. Click on the blog, and you can learn more about these two gentlemen. Have a good day, everyone.
You too.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks again. Nice to meet you.
This is the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio. This has been the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio.